Then it will come to order. Messages from the house.
February the 24th, 2012, from the House of Representatives. Third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 66, Industrial Siding Financial Resources. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 1, conflict 1. House Bill number 87, Mixed Martial Arts. Ayes 59, noes 5, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. Third reading passed amended. House Bill 87, Mixed Martial Arts. Ayes 54, noes 5, excused 1.
House bills on first reading, or do we have other reports? House bills on first reading. House Bill 66, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill number 66, sponsored by Representative Stubson, Industrial Siding Financial Resources, and Act Relating to Industrial Siding. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 57, noes 1, excused 1. That's only 59.
House Bill 66 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. Is that all? Okay. Do I have reports from standing committees?
Let's see. February the 24th, 2012, Mr. President, your committee number one judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 52, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman. February the 24th, 2012, Mr. President, your committee number one judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 13, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman. February the 24th, 2012, Mr. President, your committee number one judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 12, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman. February the 24th, 2012, Mr. President, your committee number one judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 25, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business for consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye. All those opposed, no. Motion carries. Senator Bebout.
The Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 36. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 36, sponsored by the Travel Committee, State Parks Acquisition of LX Bar Ranch, an act relating to state parks and cultural resources. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Dockstader, Driscoll, and Escobel. Senator Burns, Chairman. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye. Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flateren, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 36, State Parks Acquisition of LX Bar Ranch. There are no standing committee amendments. Mr. Chairman, this particular piece of property consists of 40 acres up in northern Campbell County. And I had pictures, actually could do more justice to this than any description I can. I had pictures distributed. There's four of them there. And if you look at the second one, that is a two-story solar-powered chicken coop that was built 100 years ago. Mr. Chairman, this was the headquarters of the massive ranches, I believe over 200,000 acres, owned by John B. Kendrick 100 years ago. The owner of this property, due to health problems, would like to donate this to the state. The state would like to accept the donation. You can see the construction work. He had master stonemasons come in, and they actually quarried the stone within a couple hundred yards of the buildings themselves. If you go to the third picture, which is the aerial view, you can see how massive this is. By the way, when you look at the stonework on that chicken coop, that's what every building is like. The barn itself is over 20,000 square feet. If you there is an appropriation with this bill of $280,000. That is what it's a one-time appropriation. That's what it is expected. That's considered to be the high end to go in and basically mothball this facility, make sure all the drainage is right, and make it human-proof and animal-proof and so forth, board it up, stabilize the foundations. And if you look at the last picture, you can see the main ranch house, and you'll see the north wall. You can see there is some instability there, and they have to go in and stabilize that and repoint the stonework. Mr. Chairman, I think this is a marvelous opportunity for the state. It is John B. Kendrick was one of the seminal characters in the founding of the state of Wyoming. He was a very large rancher, senator, governor. He was the one who, while he was in Washington, found the Teapot Dome scandal, for which actually my grandfather ended up spending 2 days in jail for contempt of Congress. That's another story. So, Mr. Chairman, I would welcome questions, but I urge the body to take advantage of this opportunity. The mothballing will preserve it for at least the next 30 years. We don't know exactly what the state is to do with it yet. Different people have different ideas. The county commissioners of Campbell County are very interested in this, and given the resources that Campbell County has, I could see in a few years this actually becoming something, actually one of the crown jewels of historic ranching in the state of Wyoming.
Heard of the question? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, particularly in the northern or the eastern third of the state, we're gradually getting the state locked up so people can't get out and take advantage of Wyoming's great outdoors. Are there recreational opportunities here, or is this a small enough tract and isolated enough that that's not present?
Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, the isolation of this site is both a blessing and a curse to it. It's about 60 miles from Sheridan. It's about almost 50 miles from Gillette up a 20-mile gravel road. So, and it's on the wrong side of the Powder River from the road, from the gravel road there. It is a curse in that its isolation, I think, would preclude the idea of some sort of historic site to bring tourists to be cost-effective. But at the same time, I think its isolation is what has actually preserved it. It has been abandoned for almost 50 years now. And when it's the preservation, I think, owing to the craftsmanship, has just been remarkable. I hope that answers the question. It comes with about 40 acres, so from a recreational standpoint, good, bad. But it's also on the Powder River, so there might be some recreational aspects to it that we don't realize yet.
Heard of the question? Question being called for. Senator Coe.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just want us to be careful because I've seen things happen out there like this, and I think this ranch is probably beautiful. But I can tell you that down the road, some of the examples I can think of are over the hill on the other side. I won't tell you what the project is necessarily over in Albany County, but these things, once you buy into them, you know, it's just going to be an ongoing requirement to come in, do this and do that and do this and do that. I see this as something that we need to keep our eye on a little bit. This is something that 2 or 3 years down the road could really come back and bite us.
Senator Driscoll.
Rising on and for, this is a great project. It will not put you in jail. It's got great virtue. It's in the right place and the right thing over time. And this isn't a huge amount to preserve something that down the road is truly a one of a kind. Does not have ongoing budget. Does not have ongoing draw on the state budget. This is to get it, hold it in place, keep it where it is. Without this, we can really lose something that is a huge part of the heritage, not only of Northeast Wyoming, but of this town. This is a tribute to the ranching heritage of the state of Wyoming, which we have very little left to show of those original ranch buildings. This is a great project.
Senator Burns.
The senior senator from Park County's caution is admirable, and I would agree with it. I can see it, and I would agree with it if we had some sort of plans down the road to actually restore it and bring it up to some sort of tourist or historic site or something like that. That is not the plan. Right now, we don't know what the plan is. The idea here is to go in and just preserve it for the next 3 decades. Hopefully that sometime during that time, the state will either decide what it wants to do with it, or I think more likely there'll be some sort of cooperative agreement with other parties to do something with this particular piece of property. But right now the important thing is preserving it, because it is starting to deteriorate, and once that happens, it accelerates.
Senator Escobar.
Mr. Chairman, I support the acceptance of this ranch, and as the good senator from Park County mentioned, it could come back later and bite us. On the other hand, losing this opportunity might also be even a bigger bite. So I would urge your approval of this Senate File 36. Thank you.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's probably an admirable thing to do, and I have one question. What about water rights? Do they come with this piece of property, or are there any rights to be conveyed?
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I am not aware of any water rights dealing with this property. The property itself is basically the homestead. It's 40 acres. So any sort of agricultural operation would probably be precluded anyway. It is on the Powder River, and I assume wells could be drilled if needed, but it would probably be for domestic use.
Ready for the question? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senate File 36 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 36 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate Joint Resolution 2.
Senate Joint Resolution 2, sponsored by the Tribal Relations Corporation. Riverton Uranium Mill Tailing Remedial Action and Joint Resolution requesting Congress to provide for increased monitoring and funding for remediation of the Riverton Uranium Mill Tailing Remediation Site. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Mineral Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cole, Cooper, and Jennings. No, Senator Rothfuss, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises and reports, to do so with a favorable recommendation that Senate Joint Resolution 2 do pass. Mr. Chairman, there's also a standing committee amendment, number 1, that I would ask that you read in at this time.
Please read it in.
Senate Joint Resolution 2, standing committee amendment number 1, page 2, line 9.
Senator Cooper.
Mr. Chairman, I'll leave it up to the good...
You want to move it?
I was going to leave it up. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, okay. I'll move standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate Joint Resolution number 2. And, Mr. Chairman, I would yield to the good senator from Fremont County in the corner.
Senator Case.
In the bill.
Fremont County... Mr. Chairman, I want to compliment the chairman of the Minerals Committee. He did awful good work on this, as well as all the members. But, Mr. Chairman, I know you're very familiar with it, but I'd like to tell the Senate about the Riverton Mill tailing site, which is located between the Big and Little Wind River. And it was a place where uranium ore was processed between about 1958 and 1963. At that time, they recovered uranium and other few heavy metals that were gathered from the gas hills. The site was actually, all these piles of uranium tailings were left there, and for many years people used them all over the county. You could use them for fill, you could use them, they ended up on some streets, but eventually it was recognized that this was a fairly serious health hazard, and the tailings themselves were removed and hauled back and put in an abandoned mine in the gas hills. But what has happened is that after that, monitoring wells were drilled, and it was expected that the site would naturally clean itself up. But unfortunately, that hasn't happened. And in all the time, the pollution on the site has actually increased, especially as a result of the flooding that we had in record amounts in the year 2010. So what this resolution does, and it's... kind of shows the support of the state of Wyoming standing with the tribes of the Wind River Reservation to ask the Department of Energy to give this site increased attention, because while their prediction had been that radioactive levels would go down over the next 100 years, that's not happening, and the flooding is potentially endangered human health. And Mr. Chairman, the committee did some good work in here, because they sort of trim down some of the findings that made it a little bit tighter. But if I could go through it real quickly, it's a joint resolution requesting Congress to provide increased monitoring and funding for remediation of the Riverton Uranium Mill tailing site. Talks about the history of the site and the removal of the tailings that I talked about. It on the bottom, it talks about how it's a mandated cleanup site, but that the we have a... if you look, and Mr. Chairman, I'd like to focus on page 2, lines 6 through 10, and this is a subject of the Standing Committee Amendment. It says, whereas despite the surface remediation action taken, groundwater contamination occurred at the site with concentrations of molybdenum and uranium measured in the surficial aquifer at levels 40 times greater than the maximum concentration limits provided in EPA regulations. That's a truthful statement, but it's also kind of a little extra conclusion that we don't need in the bill. And so the Standing Committee Amendment puts a period after aquifer and deletes the rest of line 9 and line 10. The next paragraph talks about the flush strategy, but that's the strategy that's not working. Lines 21 talks about the flooding. If you go to page 3, Mr. Chairman, we're talking about the spikes in contamination, and that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's plan is not working. And then if we look on page 3, Mr. Chairman, lines 13, 14, and 15, the resolution contains a conclusion of about 20 other known contaminants. The Minerals Committee wisely said we ought to take that out, so that's also part of the Standing Committee Amendment, is to delete lines 13, 14, and 15. And so the rest of the resolution, Mr. Chairman, talks about the inability to carry out the mandates of federal law, and we're asking that Congress step in and adequately fund increased monitoring and commence active remediation at the Riverton Uranium Mill tailing site, and that the Congress basically kick the Department of Energy in the butt to work more cooperatively with state and local and tribal officials to get this thing done. That's the resolution, Mr. Chairman. It's in support of our citizens on the Wind River Reservation who also have their own tribal government. It's in support of the city of Riverton and the fact that Riverton is downstream from this site and very close to it. It's in support of all citizens of Fremont County and the state of Wyoming. And, you know, we don't do this. I know people say, well, these aren't worth the paper they're printed on. Sometimes you're right, and maybe that's why the good senator voted against it. But in a special circumstance where we're kind of supporting our partners in government on the Wind River Reservation, which are the tribal entities, they've expressed support for this. The governor of the state of Wyoming has also written a letter in support of this. And so with that, we're, you know, if it's going to be just a piece of paper, it's at least one that we're all unified on. And that's actually worth something in Wyoming because it doesn't happen very often. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Schiffer.
Just a real quick question. What have the tribes as a sovereign people, what have they done about this? Have they taken action, and what is that action?
Senator Case.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the tribes have taken action. They've also communicated with federal authorities about this. But this is a nuclear regulatory site. It is under the jurisdiction of the NRC and the Department of Energy. I don't know how the interplay goes with tribal authorities there, but it's not like they could go in and order the cleanup. They wouldn't have any resources to do so. It truly is a partnership with the federal government. And I'm not sure I entirely understand your question, but there's not much that they can do but say, look what you've done to our backyard. And there are people that live around there. There's discussions about cancer clusters. It's a very concerning health situation. And there's not much more anybody can do except for complain to the people that have jurisdiction, which is the federal government.
Senator Schiffer.
The reason I bring that up is because in the permitting process, in fact, in all of the processes that the NRC has jurisdiction over it, Native Americans have special status. And that's why I bring it up, that they may have much more leverage than what they think they do. And they may have more leverage than the legislature of the state of Wyoming, particularly dealing with that agency. And I was just curious if they've petitioned the NRC and said, hey, we're Native Americans, and we are specially recognized in their process.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I can't tell you exactly what steps they've taken. I know they've been in contact with federal authorities. Federal authorities work with the tribal monitoring people. They've written letters. I don't know if they've passed resolutions at their own level. Both tribal business councils have expressed letters in support of this resolution, but I don't have the exact answer to your question. I will certainly convey that to them and ask it, but that alone does not say we shouldn't do this or not do this. We need to do this as well. I will point out that this happened in 1958. At the time it was part of Cold War efforts. It was part of uranium. There's a big uranium boom in Fremont County. We weren't always careful about it. And at that time, probably the tribes didn't have the ability or the legal status that they have today in these entities. Of course, it happened a long time ago.
Okay, you ready for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment? Okay, we're voting on Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate Joint Resolution 2. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment has passed. Back on the bill. You ready for the question?
Question.
Question being called for. All those in favor of Senate Joint Resolution 2 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate Joint Resolution 2 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 78. Will the reading clerk please read it? Senator Coe.
Is it the floor?
Yes, you may.
As you all know, I'm a little bit involved in that little museum we have up there in Cody, and I'm
pleased today to have with us Bruce Eldridge, our executive director, his wife Jan, Janet Hedrick, and Lee Haynes from our development department. They're down here for the Governor's Arts Award. Please welcome them to the Senate.
Welcome to the Senate. Would you do us a favor and keep an eye on Senator Coe the rest of the day?
Gladly.
Meeting clerk, please read the Senate file.
Senate File 78, sponsored by Senator Johnson, Interstate Compact on Students of Military Families, an Act Relating to Education. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Coe, Jennings, and Rostov excused. Senator Landon, Senator Coe, Chairman, was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senator Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Fladern, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Senator Cope.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole Rise and Report to do so with a do-pass recommendation on Senate File 78. There is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that that be read in at this time.
Read it in, please.
Senate File 78, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 5.
Senator Cope.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that standing committee amendment and defer to Senator Johnson for an explanation of the Senate file.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, last year, I know you'll remember House Bill 161, also entitled Interstate Compact on Students of Military Families, came up here, and we were talking about it on general file. There were a lot of questions with the compact, mainly based on sovereign immunity. So rather than try to clean it up quickly, we ask that it be defeated and staff and all of the people involved could negotiate over the summer and see what the changes that can be made that were acceptable to the compact. Remember, interstate compacts have to be the same among all of the states. There's very little room for changes. But we found that very tiny little of room for changes, and we're very successful on this. So before I explain the bill, I'd like to take care of the sovereign immunity problem and then take you over to page 48, line 5. In the event any provision of this compact exceeds the constitutional limits imposed on the legislature of any member state, such provision shall be ineffective to the extent of the conflict with the constitutional provision in question in that member state. So I think that did that quite well. We need the compact in Wyoming. We need the compact in all 50 states. And I had a map passed out to you, a nice colorful map here, interstate compact status. You'll see the 40 states in green. You'll see the yellow 4 states that are considering it this year. And then there are 4 states not actively considering the interstate compact. The reason Montana isn't because there's a biennial legislature and they don't meet this year. But many military families encounter significant school challenges when dealing with the enrollment, eligibility, placement, and graduation of their children. That's due to frequent relocations in the parents' career in the service. Most of the children will move 6 to 9 different times up to the 12th grade. This is a work of the Council of State Governments, National Center for Interstate Compacts, and the Department of Defense, and, of course, all of the states that are involved in it. The compact reflects input from policy experts and stakeholders in 18 different organizations. They include representative parents, teachers, school administrators, military families, and federal and state and local officials. What it does, it provides for uniform treatment of the military children as they move between the states and move between the school districts, so they are treated well. They're treated like all of the other students and at the local level, and they can benefit from their education. The standard example is here comes a senior to a school in Wyoming who has had Maryland, Iowa, and Minnesota state history classes, and now for him to graduate, or her, and they're in Wyoming, they have to take Wyoming history classes. There's a lot of things like that, but I'm not going to go into stories. Participation by the state is completely voluntary, but to participate, we must adopt the Interstate Compact. Now, the compact itself, pages 1 through 18, concerns the students, incoming students and students going out of state, and the relationships between those two school districts as to how the students will be treated, what information will be sent, and how timely that information will be sent. Pages 20 through 48 is the Interstate Compact Commission itself. And the commission is made up of one commissioner from each state. Each state has a committee that we form to manage the compact in Wyoming. And in the bill, they say, they give a couple, three examples and say, these are some examples, but do whatever you want. It's your state. It's your in-state commission for this. But a commissioner is appointed that attends all of the commission meetings. The fiscal note is on page 43, and it calls for up to $5,000, a maximum of $5,000 a year membership from each state. Now, at this time, if I may, Mr. Chairman, I would like to go over to Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. And there was no original appropriation in here. The fiscal note said that it would be $7,000, which was $5,000, up to $5,000 for Interstate Compact membership, and $2,000 for the commissioner to go to the meetings. There's at least one meeting a year. So the Education Committee passed this, and I do appreciate that. And then the next day, I got an email from the compact that said that $5,000 is essentially to pay for the meetings and the travel of the commissioner to the meetings. So this was referred into Appropriations Committee, and that's the next amendment. So first I would like to ask that the body pass this amendment. It has been moved. So, Mr. Chairman, I would ask approval on Senate Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 78.
Ready for question? Question being called. Question being called for. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 78, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Would you please read in Standing Committee Amendment 2, reading clerk?
Senate File 78, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, page 49, line after line 2.
Senator Johnson. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 78. This simply clarifies the appropriation that it's 5,000 and not 7.
Heard of the question? Question being called for. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 78, signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are several others who want to talk on this, so I'm going to make one more comment unless there are questions. Several weeks ago, the governor got a phone call from General Norton A. Schwartz, Chief of Staff, United States Air Force. And the call was based on solely one subject. Would the governor do what he could do to pass the Interstate Compact on students of military families? That's how important it is to our military community back in the Pentagon that the Air Force Chief of Staff would call our chief executive.
Senator Cole.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think this is a really important piece of legislation. I don't think there's any question about it. I've got a good friend who's high up in the Air Force, also does some work up at our museum. And he sent me an email, and he said, let me tell you what's happening with the cutbacks at the Department of Defense. As they figure out how they're going to deploy the resources around the different bases, whatever they do, they're going to take into consideration what's going on, like here at Francis E. Warren, what's going on in the state of Wyoming. So this is important because this puts kind of a tool in the tool chest to help families be able to locate here. And it's, you know, if we don't pass this piece of legislation, I'm not saying that they're going to close Warren down and they're going to move families some other place. But this is a tool that's going to make it attractive for the Department of Defense to move families around like they do 6, 7, 8 times in, you know, between grades 1 and 12. So I think this is a very important piece of legislation. It's been rebuilt since last year. We liked it in committee. I'd urge that the body adopt this bill.
Further discussion? Question being called for? All those in favor of Senate File 78 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 78 has passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 71. And the reading clerk, please read the Senate file.
Senate File 71, sponsored by Senator Christensen, Aquatic Invasive Species, an act relating to aquatic invasive species. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, and Wildlife Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Dockstader, Driscoll, and Esquivel. Senator Burns, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Fladeren, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 71, Aquatic Invasive Species. Mr. Chairman, there are two standing committee amendments. I ask that both of them be read in now.
Reading clerk, read them in, please.
Senate File 71, second reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 3. Senate File 71, second reading amendment number 2, page 2, line 13.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the first standing committee amendment with a further explanation of both the bill and the first standing committee amendment. I ask that you call on the senator from Practically Idaho.
Practically Idaho. Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the body, this morning you had a handout at your desk called the Aquatic Invasive Species Information Sheet. It's kind of a hard copy, two-sided. It addresses the problem we're talking about today, the aquatic invasive species. It focuses primarily on the quagga and zebra mussel, the most imminent threat we have as far as our aquatic invasive species invasion that we're fighting off right now. They're within 60 miles of our borders. These little fellas, little creatures, once they get into your water, you can't get them out. When they arrive, they're here to stay. We go from a prevention mode to a treatment mode, and the treatment is incredibly expensive. I'll let you read this sheet on your own, but just one of the little high points, they can affect your municipal waters. We have 30 different municipalities that draw from surface waters. They can affect our ag. They get into the ditches, they get into our canals, and they can get into our pipes and pump systems for our irrigation systems. They have a huge impact on our fisheries. Lake Ontario, within 10 years of being infected, a 95% reduction in lake trout. Remember what I said, once we get them, you don't get rid of them, you just start to treat them. Very expensive, and the sheet goes into those numbers. They're fairly shocking numbers. Ladies and gentlemen, this bill today, this amended bill, or this bill for that's talking about aquatic invasive species, it does one really important thing. There's a couple, but the main thing is it takes our focus from an interior check system that operates in the daylight hours 3 or 4 months of the year in a few places around our lake that we've been doing the last 2 years and successfully, I might add. It takes that and changes it to a law. The bill changes this to a law that says any conveyance entering the state of Wyoming will be inspected before it enters or touches our waters. This is critical to find out and stop what's coming in. As far as we know, based on the last 2 years, we do not have these bugs. They are not in our waters. We've conducted a lot of tests, and we're pretty darn sure that we're okay. But remember, they're only 60 miles away at the closest. They're on, I believe, three sides of our state. We're a headwater state. The only way we're going to get these is by allowing them to come in. They've got to be transported in. We're not going to get them from anybody upstream. Before I go much farther, Mr. Chairman, I'd move the, like to move Standing Committee 1.
It's already been moved. Go ahead.
Thank you. And ask for the approval, and then I'll go ahead and explain it.
Well, you ought to explain it before we vote on it, hadn't you?
I've got it. We can do that. I'm trying to get it in there. It's... We're moving right along here. This amendment, I'll take your eyes, if you will, right to the middle of the amendment. And this is the meat of it. Here, line 2, or page 2, line 3, the commission shall promulgate rules establishing the dates for such inspections or when such inspections are required and qualifications for authorized inspectors. We don't have the staff right now, and even with this bill, we're not going to have the staff to run 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. What this allows the commission to do is to work on the rules that address when the threat is out there and adapt and move their staff around for both the hours of the day, the days of the month, that we need to be really focusing on it. There are certainly times of the year, and it might be on a Thursday evening at midnight, when you have the Navy from a foreign state invading. We'll have to be dealing with those folks. But on the other hand, in the middle of January, we don't have a lot of open waters. And so that's an important rule that the Commission's going to be working on, and other ones like that, to describe what it takes for an authorized inspector, and also refine the focus on what we're inspecting. Keep in mind that at first language, it's the boats or the conveyances that are going to enter the waters. It's not every boat coming down the freeway or coming across our highways. It's the ones that are going to be touching our waters, the ones that puts us at risk. On page 2, line 6 of that, when you go down to line 22 of that amendment, one of the other unusual things that's developed out of this bill is we have come up with a team. We've come up with a group of individuals to work on this. Fish and Game takes a lead. YDOT is named in there. The Department of Ag is named. And state parks are named. Everyone recognizes the threat to our waters and the impact it could have all across our state. And as a result, all these different organizations, recognizing the financial challenges we're facing in the future, have stepped forward and said, they're part of it. They recognize that they have a role, and by working together, we'll have more success on this. Down at the bottom, it talks about 18 positions, 18 part-time positions. And again, the beauty of that is we're not adding full-time staff, but what we're doing is being able to focus and use those people when we need them and where we need them and the hours of the day. With that explanation, I'd ask for support of this motion.
Ready for the question? Question being called for. We're voting on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 71. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That Standing Committee Amendment has passed. Senator Christensen, continue.
Mr. Chairman, there's one more Standing Committee, and with the permission of the Chairman of Appropriations, I'd move that Standing Committee Number 2 for Senate File 71. Is that okay?
I'm not the chairman. Yeah, you're fine to move it. Go ahead. It's moved. Continue.
This one is a significant change. When I talked about that partnership earlier on how these different groups have all come together to pool their resources, what that's allowed us to do is to change the original request from $1.2 million down to, if you'll look at that, $852,000 for the biennium. It's important to note that $283,000 is one-time funding for supplies, for equipment, for signs. That's what's going to get the notice up. We've got to post all the roads or the main roads around the state. And what that posting is going to say is just what this bill describes. When you come into this state, you have to be inspected. We'll also have access to the 24-hour hotline number so that those people coming in can either make that inspection on their arrival into the state or set it up at their convenience and working together with state officials. The reduction you're seeing in the first request of appropriations for the biennium budget of $569,000. That's a significant reduction, and that is, again, comes around from working together with different agencies. It is just getting a structure out there. There's a lot we don't know about this. When we go to manning these points and checking all the boats that are coming into the state, this first 6 months is going to be an eye-opener. There will be a lot of statistics collected and a lot of information, and I'm cautiously optimistic that this is going to work. This amount of staffing is going to work, and more importantly, I think with the framework, we'll be prepared to deal with whatever challenges come our way in the future with our state dollars. I'd ask for your support on that motion for the amendment.
Okay. Question being called for. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 71 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment is passed. Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman. There we go. Today our efforts in this state and the existing program we have is just over $2 million. What this is going to add is another $287,000 a year, takes it into a year-round program, mandatory inspections. It's a great investment in protecting our waters. Well, there's that old saying, whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting. Well, this is the time to fight for Wyoming's waters, and I'd encourage you to support this bill. And it stand for questions.
Question being called for. All those in favor of Senate File 71 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 71 has passed committee of the whole. Next bill for consideration is Senate File 66. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 66, sponsored by Senator Perkins, Medical Assistance Hospice Care, an act relating to Medicaid. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Martin, Nutting, Schiffer, and Scott. No, Senator Dockstader, Senator Scott, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Fladern. No, Senator Meyer, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 66 do pass. There was no standing committee amendment from the first committee, and I yield to Senator Perkins for an explanation of the Senate file.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, what we've got in Senate File 66 is an effort working with hospice programs around the state to try and basically help assist this with this program. If you go back in about the year 2000, Mr. Chairman, the Governor's Commission on Aging found out one of the things they wanted to do was in aging was maintain support or maintain choice in health care choices for our aging population. And what we did, what hospice care does is hospice care provides that type of care, particularly in those end-of-life situations, typically in the last six months of a person's life, most of the time less than that. This hospice care is provided to help these families and people transition into this stage through this stage of life. What we've done, and one of the things that happens to that is hospice care typically is provided in homes, individuals' homes, or in nursing homes where hospice individuals or volunteers, whether trained or paid, go out to homes and they provide this end-life, this transition and counseling and care in those in-place settings. One of the things that we find, particularly in rural Wyoming, is there are certain places where individuals don't have that care, or they may be in hospitals. We want to try and transition them to hospice facilities. We now have in the state about somewhere between 60 to 70 hospice inpatient beds that are available throughout the state. There's some under construction, and I believe up in either in Cody or Riverton, and I believe that there are beds that are in the studying phase and design phase down in the Rock Springs area. Nevertheless, what we've got in the end of this, we'll have probably somewhere around 80 to 88 beds.
across the state. One of the things that happens, though, is these beds are not subject. The actual room and board that happens in these inpatient care is not covered by Medicaid. So we're talking about Medicaid dollars. Now, so anyway, what this bill does is it provides that in the instance that these individuals are in the home and are qualified for Medicaid, so they're still subject to all of the qualification requirements for Medicaid, that the state would reimburse them for the Medicaid rate for the inpatient hospice care there. Which brings us to the, at this point, what I'd like to do, if I could, is go ahead and have the first standing committee amendment read in, and we'll deal with that this time.
Please read it in.
Senate File 66, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 2.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'd move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 66 and ask for your favorable consideration. What this does is we went through, long and short of this, as we talked this out with the Department and with the Appropriations Committee, is determined that this bill could be and would be made subject to the next committee, the next committee of the whole Amendment Number 1. It would be revenue neutral. And so what Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 is, it removes the appropriation from this bill. I'd ask for your consideration. I call for the question this time if there are no questions with respect to Standing Committee Amendment Number 1.
Heard of the question? Question being called for. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 66, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I ask this time if we could have Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 66 read in.
Please read it in.
Senate File 66, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 14.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'd move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 66 and ask for your favorable consideration. What this amendment does is this is what makes it revenue neutral. Ultimately, the consensus of both the Department and the Appropriations Committee, and I concur, is that when we do this, is it's likely to be revenue neutral and most likely will come out ahead, but it's probably revenue neutral. The reason that it will be revenue neutral is if they were to transfer from a nursing home, it's likely that they would be covered to this extent anyway, and will probably come out ahead because if we're able to move them out of hospitals into hospice care with this program, we'll actually be going from about, in this case, about an $85 a day per diem rate that would be reimbursed under this bill, and decreasing that from somewhere between $8,000 to $10,000 a day rate in a hospital that would be fully paid. So long and short of this is we're able to provide in this unique situation increased and better care for individuals in end-of-life stages, and doing so by saving money and preserving health care choice for our seniors. And that explains the bill, and I'll stand for any questions, and if not, I'll call for the question.
Question on the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I would like a little explanation. Statewide average of the Medicaid hospice nursing home room and board rate. Is there a special Medicaid hospice nursing home rate? What are we talking about here? I wonder whether this is actually worded right. Do you mean of the... If you said of the Medicaid nursing home room and board rate, I'd understand what you're talking about. But the way it's worded, I'm not sure I do understand.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. I think that's a good catch, and I think we need to come back on Second Amendment and do that. I didn't catch that. That's probably what we should probably do on this one's Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, line 18. We should be striking the word hospice, so it would just be the Medicaid nursing home room and board rate. So what we're talking about, the intent of this is we'd reimburse at 50% of the average nursing home, Medicaid nursing home rate for the state. And the reason it's half is because this room and board is not covered and would not be subject to the federal Medicaid match. And so in doing this, we're going to reimburse up to the 50% that the state would be paying for that nursing home care in any event, and the state will not be paying that extra amount. This is good for the hospice facilities in that it's certainly more than they're receiving now, and so it will benefit them. It will benefit patients, and I would be happy to bring back a second reading amendment to correct that error in this amendment.
Further discussion? Question being called for. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 66 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Further discussion on the bill? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and I'm certainly, having had very recent experience with the wonderful level of care that these hospice folks provide, I'm certainly supportive of this bill. I do think I don't fully understand the financial implications yet. I would think where we were paying half the nursing home rate, we would still find that the families would have a significant daily rate that they would be responsible for. I would guess it would be in the vicinity of $100 a day, just making a crude guess. So some of your Medicaid people will not be able to afford it, but many will have the family resources to come up with it at this point. I would like, from the sponsor of the bill, a little better explanation of what's going on the financial side, because I just don't quite see how it works yet. But I do think, Mr. Chairman, it's a bill we ought to pass.
Question being called for. All those in favor of Senate File 66 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 66 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 68. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 68, sponsored by Senator Landon. Time limits for veterans and dependent tuition and fees, an act relating to veterans' educational benefits. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Johnson, Landon, Nutting, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, I move it do so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File 68, time limits for veteran and dependent tuition and fees, and for an explanation of this bill, I yield to the sponsor, Senator Landon.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fellow senators, this bill comes back to you the same way that it left upon introduction. This is the bill you might remember that we go into Chapter 14, and we amend 106, which currently defines our overseas combat veterans as those other than Vietnam veterans. The distinction on that is that our Vietnam veterans have no limits, have no time limits on what they can, on when they can access their tuition benefits that we provide. Back about 10 years ago in this statute, we did put a time limit on our Afghanistan and Iraqi veterans. I assume that was for fiscal reasons. And I will say up front that this does have a small fiscal note to it. But all this bill does is provide for the same benefits for our Iraqi and Afghanistan veterans coming back from overseas as we currently provide to our Vietnam veterans. That is not a limitless benefit that we provide. They have 10 semesters that they can utilize those. But you might remember upon introduction, we talked about the fact that sometimes those overseas combat vets come home, they are trying to get their families raised. They're trying to get acclimated and back into life in the States. And by the time they get around to having an opportunity to access those benefits, this 10-year time limit is coming up. A lot of our veterans are getting to that point right now. So that's what this bill does. It simply puts our Iraqi and Afghanistan overseas combat vets on the same standing as our Vietnam vets. Be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Discussion? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senate File 68 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 68 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is Senate File 79. Will the reading clerk please read Senate File 79? Reading clerk.
Senate File 79, sponsored by Senator Hicks, Wildlife Trust Challenge Account Extension, and Act Relating to Wildlife. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Dockstad, Driscoll, and Escobel. Senator Burns, Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 79, Wildlife Trust Challenge Account Extension. And for a further there are no standing committee amendments. And for a further explanation of the bill, I ask that you call on the sponsor, Senator Hicks.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is a good little bill. Basically, the only thing this does is it just extends the revision date from 2012 to 2015 for the Wildlife Trust Cat. I would reference you. There's a handout on your desk that came out earlier. And this was a fund that was established in 2006 when the Wildlife Trust Fund was first established. But this was a separate account, and what it was designed to do was to encourage partners to donate into the trust. And what you have in here is a list in the last 6 years of all the different entities that have contributed to the challenge match. And I would reference you, I talked about this on the introduction, they range as matches as low as $90 from the high school from Douglas all the way up to $500,000 from one of the petroleum countries. But one of the things that I think is very unique about this is you see a broad scale of contributions of partners from the private sector, the conservation sector, the wildlife sector, on almost every industry sector you can find in Wyoming, from uranium, the mining is big, oil and gas is big, energy sector from wind power. If you look at the page 2 where it says sage grouse habitat mapping, those are all the different industries. Currently working with a couple other big corporate partners to do some donations. There's presently $1.3 million left in this challenge account. So as industry or conservation people donate to the trust fund, this just basically matches it to go into the corpus of the trust. I would ask for your favorable consideration. I stand for any questions.
Senator Jennings.
If it's such a good account, why do we have to extend it?
Senator Hicks.
Because it's working, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, people are putting in there. We had no idea when this was first established in 2006. How quick and how fast that this would come on board. But the simple fact is we still have industry partners out there that recognize the benefits of this, or they wouldn't be contributing. So this provides that continued opportunity to build the corpus of the trust with those private donations, the obligation of the state to match those.
Further discussion? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. Question, further question. What happens if we don't extend this? I thought that in talking with the good senator in front of me, that there is a consequence, I believe, with this bill if you don't.
Senator Hicks.
Answer the majority floor leader's question. If we don't extend this and we have a large corporate partner that comes in there and donates, this $1.3 million reverts. There's no additional contributions that go to the corpus of the trust. The other thing is it discourages corporate or private donations, because the way this works is, and I'll tell you, I've been working with one potentially large corporate partner. Their interest in doing this is it decreases their exposure. And I'll just use some hypothetical figures. Let's assume that they donate $100,000 to this. Well, the trust matches that. So what this effectively does, and one of the reasons that you see a lot of corporate partners in here, basically, we've said if you're willing to put up for a project, then the trust is willing to put up for a project. We'll match that. Now, their actual contribution goes to the corpus of the trust. But the on-the-ground work that gets done doubles those corporate dollars to get that work done on the ground. So it decreases the ability to get the work done that those donators are contributing to. So I'll give you the example. Somebody donates $100,000. A real-world example that I've been working on right now is to reduce some liability for some oil and gas companies due to some water wells. Those water wells are currently artesian flowing, but due to Oil and Gas Conservation Commission regulations, they're being required to cap these wells. These artesian wells, some of them have been flowing for 20 or 30 years, and they have sage-grouse habitat around them with that green feature. You've got antelope and mule deer, and you've also got a livestock industry that's developed around that access to that water. So what this would effectively do, by those donating that dollars to the trust, if they donate $100,000, the trust matches it. We have $200,000 now to go out there and redrill these wells to reduce their potential liability to having these water wells on their locations. And it's a regulatory thing that's through the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission that's saying, look, you've got to plug these for safety reasons. So they donate, the trust doubles that, so we have $200,000 to go out there. And so industry says, look, this is a good deal for us. We're able to decrease our potential liability. We've got a partner with the trust. We recognize that there's a benefit of our wells right now, artesian flowing out here with these wildlife populations and the agricultural component that's developed around that access of water. So it becomes a shared responsibility, and it gives the opportunity to people to go out and do really good things. In this case, we're just going to move these water wells off of their locations and put them out there a quarter of a mile away to maintain those hydrophytic features for that wildlife, and then also with those agricultural operations. They're not bearing the whole brunt of that cost because the trust matches it. And then the corpus also grows. So it has dual purposes. So the consequences is we start to lose those corporate partners. With that, I'd stand for any more questions. Mr.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You had me when you said it worked. But then I also heard you say that the money's matched into the fund, which means that your inviolate fund would grow. But then I heard this description about how these funds would be doubled and go out into a project. So I'm confused about, does the money out of this program, is it matched and put in the inviolate fund, or is it matched and put in the field for projects?
Senator Hicks?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding of the way the program works is they match the funds to go onto the ground, and there's also a matching contribution that goes into the corpus. What I would promise you to do is I'll go back and get the exact answer to that question before second reading. But that's my understanding as it is today, but I do need some clarification for that point. So I would say if we can move this on, I'll have that answer for you on second reading.
Further discussion? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senate File 79 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 79 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 77. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 77, sponsored by Senator Case, Expenditure of Public Funds and Government Competition, an act relating to the administration of government. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election and Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, and Martin. Senator Scott absent. Senator Hines acting chairman.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 77, Expenditures of Public Funds and Government Competition. Senators, this new and improved bill goes into the what the bill does in general is to give our citizens the opportunity to complain about activities in government that they believe competes with them or other businesses. And it does it in a very simple manner because it goes into an existing website that we have called the Government Transparency website that we passed a couple years ago. And it amends, it directs the director of the Department of A&I to modify that website to make it available to be able to retain and allow citizens to lodge their concerns via the website. There's no personnel involved. They just log onto the website and they lodge their concerns. It will require that the citizen have a little bit of structure. They'll link on something called the government competition concerns, and they'll be able to kind of fill out a table that says the entity involved, the activity involved, whether the concern is a result of a specific instance or ongoing activity, the effect of the competition on the citizen's commercial activity, if applicable, a means to contact the citizen for further information if necessary, and And it'll also, the website will also provide access to all the information submitted pursuant to this paragraph. So it's all going to be open and above board. Finally, and Mr. Chairman, it directs that the Department of A&I will achieve that by June 30th, 2012, to modify the existing website to retain that information. It also requires that the Department of A&I, beginning in 2013, give us a report about the number of concerns that were received, the entities that the concerns were received about, and a summary of the complaints, if it's possible. That's all the website does. It's very simple and largely involves no activity by a human being, but it does give our citizens the opportunity to lodge these concerns. I think that's a fundamental thing that will be a benefit, Mr. Chairman. And if we get no concerns, that tells us a lot. If we get a lot of concerns, that also tells us a lot, but we'd have to evaluate it. I have no idea which way it's going to go, but I've heard anecdotally that some citizens are concerned about activities of our government that are in competition. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions. And this is a much, much tamer version because it doesn't require any investigation and other things, and it's not lodged in the executive office or the auditor. It's kind of just on a website in the A&I.
Discussion? Mr. Jory Forleader.
Thank you. Question. It would seem to me that there would be some sort of cost involved in this. And, of course, I don't see any appropriation. But it would seem that there would be a cost to potentially modify the site. Wondering, that's my first question. My second question is, this is in A&I, whether or not you considered the OCIO's office to maintain this. Maybe that's something that they can do in and of themselves. And finally, the report. It seems to me that once they make this report, there's a cost potentially there also. So I'm just wondering, I mean, just the mechanics. It sounds great that we just say we're just going to modify a website, but there's labor involved. Does it need, you know, how to what extent is this doable without any appropriation?
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, the director of the Department of A&I was there, and also there had been a fiscal note presented earlier that said that this would cost $50,000 to do. He explained, and we kind of discussed it in committee, that $50,000 estimate was sort of an off-the-cuff, cold call, building a thing from scratch, that there definitely is a possibility that there could be some assistance with developing this website from even private sector that might be interested in contributing code or somehow making it happen. We definitely, I think, the conclusion that was left that it's not a $50,000 thing. You know, websites are pretty simple. With regard to the cost of, like, the report and things like that, it's envisioned that this would be just kind of dumping the data off the website. And it's always available so that you can look at those stuff anyway. So you could form your own reports, actually, on an ongoing basis. The Office of the CIO question, we just put this in the we modeled this after the transparency bill passed by this legislature 2 years ago, so it was kind of under the same direction. Of course, the Office of the CIO and A&I are closely linked. I don't think I clearly understand all the lines of responsibility, but I would think we would get cooperation both ways. I think I've answered all the questions, Mr. Chairman. I will just add that you should have a letter of some very large business organizations that support this. And actually, nobody came to testify against it in committee, and I haven't heard a complaint about it.
Senator Scobell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering what parameters we might have on this, because I can imagine, think of a lot of situations where the public might be given the impression that something's going to happen with their concerns, or that there's some government entity that is competing with their private commercial interests.
Well, for example, there are some private schools out there. Who's to say they would not have a concern against the university? A private school could say we can do the job better than the university. Or recycling. There's some concerns there. Some people feel that private enterprise can do a better job of recycling than government. Who knows? There might even be a concern lodged against this legislative body thinking that a private enterprise could do a better job than the state. I just wonder what parameters there might be, and if we're not just creating a system for additional dissatisfaction.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, question for the sponsor, or maybe a concern. It seems like if the citizens are making complaints and raising, putting effort into complaining, and do you suppose there might be an expectation on their behalf that we're going to take some action against municipalities or counties and their elected officials? I'm not sure if that's the intent, or it seems like there may be an expectation if the citizenry gets involved and starts to identify local concerns, and what does that do with our relationship?
Senator Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, and to my good colleague, I'm just curious about language on line 2, pages 9 and 10. It specifically calls out the University of Wyoming, and not that there's anything wrong with that. I have no objection to people complaining about it. But I was curious if there was a statutory reason why the other colleges and colleges around the state weren't also called out, or if that should be added. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good questions. With regard to the parameters, there really are no parameters. But I think everything kind of has to stand on their own. This is a transparency website. If you got someone that wants to repeatedly complain about something that we all think is trivial, it just stands on its own merits. I imagine there might be people that think the private sector can do a better job than this body right here. But maybe some of those kind of complaints will be lodged. Fine. You kind of have to sort through all that, just like you have to sort through your mail and figure out which ones are good and bad. But before this existed, people didn't have the opportunity to do it in a central place where we could all look at it and discuss it and say, well, that one doesn't make any sense, but this one does. With regards to the expectations, I can envision that the website would have to have a disclaimer. This is only a website. You're lodging concerns. The most that's going to happen is it's going to be tabulated, but it's publicly available, and you're encouraged to monitor and help us to look at these things. Regarding our relationships with local governments, I know the same disclaimer probably have to say it's a state of Wyoming website. We don't control the actions of all the things that you're complaining about, but it is an opportunity to lodge those concerns. And that specifically is that it's a central place for all levels of government, local, state. I can't make the federal government there, but that's the purpose of the amendment that brings the University of Wyoming into being, you could complain about the university in essence. It would not be my intent to exclude anyone. And I believe the community colleges are caught a different way, but if they're not, I will try to figure out a way to get them in there with an amendment. So it wasn't really singling out the university. It was just saying the transparency website doesn't include the university now. This would include them for the purpose of allowing a citizen to lodge their concerns. Hope I've covered the questions, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to seem too ironic on this, but couldn't this be done better by a private concern?
I'm serious.
Senator Driscoll.
Chairman, if I may, I'll answer a little bit. It's been tried by private concern. This is a great bill. It really, really addresses something. It's a serious issue out there. Government competition is a big deal, and as a person that's been the recipient of it, it's really hard to get near things, and I think it would do us well to take a good look at something that doesn't cost a lot of money to see what might be a problem.
Further discussion? Ready for the question? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senate File 77, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 77 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 83. Will the reading clerk please read in the Senate file?
Senate File 83, sponsored by Senator Coe, Cigarette Manufacturing, and Act Relating to Regulation and Taxation of Tobacco. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hines, and Perkins. No, Senator Case. Senator Hines, Chairman.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a due pass on Senate File 83. And just before I yield to the sponsor of the bill, this is a bill that the sponsor will explain, and the Revenue Department is quite concerned about some of the issues that would be associated with this, and mainly cigarettes that are not stamped, which is contraband. And if people roll their own and there's no stamps, then that becomes contraband in the state of Wyoming, and it's supposed to be taken away. During the discussion in committee, one of the ideas was to get this law into effect before a lot of these machines came into Wyoming. And the testimony at that time, there was no machines in Wyoming. And I just got notice today that there is one of these machines that the sponsor will explain in more detail, have moved into my hometown just this week. So I'll yield to Senator Cole to explain the bill further.
Senator Cole.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I was going to say that this addresses a problem that has yet to occur in many states, but it has yet to surface in Wyoming till today. Expensive roll-your-own cigarette machines are being sold in many states, including states on our borders, to retailers as a way to manufacture cigarettes and avoid purchasing the required tax stamps and avoid paying the state cigarette tax. These operations also don't use state-required fire-safe paper, and avoid the requirement to pay into the Master Settlement Agreement escrow required by our state laws. This legislation does not preclude any business in Wyoming from entering into this business, or for our good friends that go to the smoking lounge out here and roll their own, but only says that if you do, you will be required to be licensed, pay the taxes, and make sure the end product cigarettes are fire safe. Quickly to walk you through the bill, If you go to page 1, starting at line 14, that states that any person who maintains one of these machines at a retail establishment will be deemed to be a tobacco product manufacturer, and the resulting product is a cigarette for purposes of Title IX, Chapter 4, Master Settlement Agreement. If you go to page 2, line 15, that expands the definition of cigarette to include those produced by on-premise machines for purposes of Title 35, Chapter 9, Fire Safe Cigarette Requirements. And finally, on page 3 at line 1, it expands the definition of cigarette manufacturer to include on-premise roll-your-own for purposes of Title 39, Chapter 18. Now, I would call your attention to this handout I just handed out. This is put out by the roll-your-own filling stations, and this is some do's and don'ts. If you're going to be doing this, do this and don't do that. The two I like the best on the do side, do instruct your employees not to discuss taxes or lawsuits regarding the machines with customers. On the don't side, the bottom one, do not ring up the sale of tobacco tubes and machine use as cigarettes, packs, or cartons. Somebody's going to catch you doing it. With that, that's an explanation of the bill, and I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Discussion? Heard for the question? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senate File 83 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 83 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 81. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 81, sponsored by Senator Peterson, Medicaid Fraud Recovery, and Act relating to Medicaid. It was referred to Committee Number 1 Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senator Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins. Senator Perkins, Chairman.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee hold rise to report, to do so with a favorable recommendation of due pass on Senate File 81, Medicaid Fraud Recovery. There is a standing committee amendment, and I would go ahead and ask that be read in at this time.
Please read it in.
Senate File 81, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 5, line 10.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'd move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 81. After an explanation of the bill and the amendment, I ask that you would call upon my desk mate, Senator Peterson.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Reading Senate File 81, we've seen this before. This is slightly a different version. This is, as mentioned in the introduction, this is a little better version, patterned after the Kansas model and getting rid of the QI-TAM provision. If you'll look at your handout that I've handed out here, it talks about Medicaid fraud is not a victimless crime. And I just wanted to point out just two lines in this, just to point out an important point. Talking about this patient who testified before Congress, the patient's name is West. West qualifies for Medicaid help with paying for 16 hours of in-home nursing care per day because he has trouble with the very basic activities of daily living, such as breathing. He depends on both the wheelchair and a ventilator. In 2004, because it was later discovered the provider had been overbilling Medicaid, a state agency told West had exceeded his monthly benefit cap and that his Medicaid services were going to be reduced or suspended as a result. And this is happening all over, in Wyoming. Whether it be innocent or on purpose, fraud is fraud, neglect is neglect, and it causes shortfalls in the fund. And, Mr. Chairman, if you have the opportunity to sit on Committee 2 like I have, and you've seen that Medicaid amount grow each and every year, and the waiver list and the waiting list, there seems to be no end in sight. And so, and I know that we've talked about it in the last 2 weeks, efforts that we're trying to improve with Medicaid are dispersion of that money. And I support those fully and am excited to see these efforts being made. The gate is far too broad, and our efforts of tracking is slim to none. And the process that we seem to have now is a pay-and-chase mode, and we hope to change that. And so this bill brings with it, Mr. Chairman, the efforts of introducing a civil remedy as well as the federal criminal remedy. And there is a difference. And the back page, the second page of that handout, will explain the differences for us that are non-attorneys in the room. And there is a big difference. The first bullet point up there, criminal. State prosecutes drivers for the law violation. Conviction could result in prison time and criminal record. But the civil is where the financial recovery for a person hit by, perhaps a drunk driver, is obtained and money damages awarded. And so those are the basic differences. What this bill would do, Mr. Chairman, would be basically introduce our Wyoming Medicaid False Claims Act. Authorizes civil recoveries. It prescribes criminal penalties as specified for failure to maintain required records, creating a cause of action for retaliatory employment actions and so on. And it does have the amendment. And basically, Mr. Chairman, the amendment was from our standing committee amendment. It was just basically cleanup language that helped this bill, helped the language of that bill, simplified things and spelled things out even more clear, which I thought were great. And I would, with that, move that we vote on this amendment.
Heard of the question? Question being called for. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 81 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Back on the bill, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that, Mr. Chairman, because we have a busy day still ahead of us, we've all known this bill. It's been here before, and I would stand for questions on the bill, and if there are any. And if not, move question on the bill.
Question being called for. All those in favor of Senate File 81 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 81 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 87. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 87, sponsored by Senator Meyer, State Employee Compensation Commission membership and act relating to the state employees. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flatern, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Senator Myers.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so if it do pass motion on Senate File 87. And, Mr. Chairman, what this bill does is simply increase the membership of the state employee compensation from 5 to 6 and add a member appointed by the Chief Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court. On introduction, the good senator from Natrona County had a concern about whether this should be a voting or non-voting member. We spoke to the Chief Justice and concluded that that his concern may indeed be valid, and the Chief Justice agreed with that. And that brings the standing committee amendment, Mr. Chairman. And could the reading clerk please read it in?
Please read it in.
Senate File 87, standing committee amendment number 1, page 2, line 7.
Mr. Chairman, I move standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 87. And having explained the amendment already in conjunction to the bill, I ask for the question on the amendment at this time and stand for questions.
Question being called for. All those in favor of standing committee member number 1 to Senate File 87 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment is passed. Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, we're back on the bill, and I call for the question on the bill.
Question being called for. All those in favor of Senate File 87 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 87 has passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 99. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 99, sponsored by Senator Nicholas, Guardian Ad Litem Program, an act relating to children. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move that with the Committee of the Whole rise report to do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 99, Guardian Litem Program. And I believe there are no amendments, and if, with your permission, I'll go ahead and explain the bill in the absence of the good Chairman of Appropriations.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Lady and gentlemen of the Senate, a number of years ago, the legislature approved and started the Guardian Ad Litem Program, which is a program where by individuals, particularly usually lawyers, are appointed to represent children or other incompetents in court matters to make sure that their interests are protected. That initially started out under the Supreme Court and was later moved to the kind of by rule and regulation and bailing wire and chewing gum, and was moved over into the state defender, public defender's office. What this bill does is simply codifies. The good Chairman of Appropriations went through and was concerned about that, and this bill goes back and codifies that move, and so it really doesn't change anything than what we have already now. It just codifies that it is under the Public Defender's Office. It doesn't change anything or do anything other than basically allows the statutes to catch up with where we are. And with that, I don't know if I have any other explanation, Mr. Chairman, would ask for any questions, and if there are no questions, would call the question.
Question being called for. All those in favor of Senate File 99 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 99 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is Senate File 95. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 95, sponsored by Senator Dockstader, Emergency Medical Service Special Districts, an act relating to special districts. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Electoral Political Subdivision. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Martin. Absent, Senator Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
Senator Hines, do you want to handle Senator Case's job?
Does so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 95, and I'll yield to the sponsor, Senator Dockstader.
Senator Dockstader.
Members of the Senate. Dan.
It should be on.
Yeah, okay. There we go. Thank you. Members of the Senate, this legislation was brought to my attention as we reviewed the special districts. We found nothing specific in the improvements in service portion of the districts for a provision that would include medical service special districts. We have adequate districts for and or powers of districts for water and sanitation, in addition to playgrounds, golf courses, swimming pools, and recreational buildings. There's also consideration for street maintenance, lighting, or other infrastructure. But the statute does not clearly provide for medical services. So members of the Senate with 95 would create a provision for the medical services. It comes on page 2, lines 5 and 6, and lines 16 and 17. Then on page 2 and continuing on page 3, the legislation allows for agreements with any public or private agency and or institution, person, so forth. This includes the collection for the medical services and the authority to charge the rates and then direct those revenues to the district. So with that, members of the Senate, that explains Senate File 95, Emergency Medical Services, Special Districts. Stand for any questions. If not, I call for the question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, looking at this on page 2, it says any unincorporated territory in the state may be formed an improvement service district to perform any of the following functions, and we're adding special local services is the existing language, or enhance the provision of emergency medical services. Mr. Chairman, I wonder a little bit about this, because it, as I understand it, is there a mill levy associated with this potentially? I suspect there is. And second, it strikes me that most of the emergency medical services are going to be a geographic area, Mr. Chairman, that will include very likely some incorporated cities. And yet it appears they can't be within the service district. And I'd like a little explanation from the sponsor on exactly how he expects these things to work. I do think there's a need for these, Mr. Chairman, because our EMS system across state is pretty fragile and has some difficulties. But I wonder how the specifics of this are going to work in these circumstances.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The specifics of a municipality, I guess I'd have to have that cleared up, Mr. Chairman, but it's my understanding that it's completely optional and up to the petitioner. And if we need to come back and do an amendment to specify the municipality, we can do that, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm just wondering, I mean, I'm having a hard time envisioning what the boundaries of this district are going to be. I mean, I assume that emergency medical services can go a long ways. They may transport over 50 miles or whatever. I'm just wondering about the breadth of this. I mean, we have a number of special districts in this state. And at one point in time, I think even when I was in the House, we tried to take a look at all the special districts, because there are so many taxing entities out there that when we talk about You know, us being such a low tax state, if you start figuring in all the other little special districts and everything, it's bigger than what you think. And some parts of the state, there's hundreds of special districts. So be careful when you start expanding special districts. And this is just one more. I don't know if there's a need or not. Maybe, but you know what's the boundaries here?
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along that line, how do we establish jurisdiction between existing medical emergency services? For example, in Laramie County, we have an EMS that is contracted, and they go wherever they have to go. But do they go to the edge of the district and transfer the patient? You know, we have to establish the borders.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, a few years ago, we had a near crisis because the EMS system that captured a part of I-80 between Laramie and Rollins, and I think dealt with the towns of Elk Mountain and Hanna and that sort of region, basically was in financial difficulty, and the health department figured some way to bail them out and keep them going. But there's some real needs in some of our rural areas, including some of the smaller cities. But I do wonder, what is there a mill levy authorized here? If so, Mr. Chairman, how much is it? And are there ways that are these subject to joint powers boards? Could you do a joint powers board between the municipality and the country folk? How's this going to work? That's what I'm confused about.
Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my understanding that based on the other districts and statute that they coordinate this with the county. As far as the boundaries go, I see that all the time now where an ambulance would pick up one person, one district, transfer, cover other districts, travel through other districts, and take them to the medical facility. As far as the Joint Powers Board, no, I don't have the answer to that question, but you turn and refer back to these other districts for playgrounds or pools or anything like that. It's probably already an existing statute, but I'd have to go back and check. Thank you.
Further discussion? Mr. Majority Floyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that we have a huge gap in when you look at special district laws. I mean, they're pretty specific. I'm still come back to this issue about sideboards. How many mills can they execute? Can they do a sales tax? In the resort districts, they use a sales tax. It seems to me that while what we've done here is it seems pretty simple, but it's not that simple. And so I think that, I just don't have a real comfortable feeling about this without really knowing what are the parameters. How are they going to fund themselves? I've been involved in when we did the resort district, which was a new district. I mean, it was pages long with regards to how you get in, get out, what revenues could they raise, to what extent is there any cap on what revenues they can raise. It just seems to me that this is not ready for prime time.
Senator Dockstetter.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to get the answers to those at this point, but be happy to proceed with a question at this point, too, as well.
Okay. Senator Perkins.
I guess we can look at that, but I was going back and just looking at the statutes on these districts, and ultimately it's just one of a number. I mean, you go through the exact same process that any special district would do. Well, so if you had a water and sewer district, or you had a typically that's the water and sewer district or a road district, you go in, you have electors, they petition the county commissioners, they go through that process, you opt in, you opt out. We just had a bill that would allow people to opt out of those things. The framework is there. All what this bill, as I understand it, essentially does is simply says that we're going to allow this. This is one of the specific elements. We're going to allow people to form special sewer as a special service district. And so it's got the sideboards are the sideboards that apply to every other service district that are out there. And so maybe there's more to it. Maybe I'm not understanding the breadth of the problem, but you know, as far as I see it, the problem you're going to have in these places is most of the time when you have a sewer and service district, for example, people opt in and people opt out, and if you're out, you don't get a play. You don't get the services. And when you go to the emergency services system, you know, does that mean that if I'm in the emergency service, that if I have a heart attack, you don't come to my door? I don't know what that means. But nevertheless, maybe that's something that gets ironed out. I don't know how they deal with that. But as far as the sideboards and the taxation, unless I'm misunderstanding something, I think it's going to be the same. It's going to be all the ones you find under Title 18, Chapter 12, under improvement and service districts that are already in the statutes.
Senator Hines.
As I understand this, this is just, as the former speaker said, it's just adding another area, and people would have to vote on it. The mill levy would be set up before there could be a mill levy. There's quite a bit in this section, as I understand, and I don't have the statute in front of me, but I feel like we need to move it along today and let the sponsor get the answers to all these questions, because I think they're already in statute.
Okay, further discussion? Ready for the question? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senate File 95 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no? Senate File 95 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for consideration is Senate File 88. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 88, sponsored by Senator Martin, Senior Citizen Service Districts, an act relating to senior citizen service districts. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Senators Hines, Johnson, and Martin. No. Senators Case and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 88, Senior Citizen Service Districts, and for an explanation of the bill, I yield to the sponsor, Senator Martin.
Senator Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the opportunity to introduce Senate File 88, Senior Citizen Service District. Mr. Chairman, as we see the need to tighten the state's budget to reflect the downturn of our revenues, we also see the budgets of cities, towns, and counties declining to a much lower level. Cities, towns, and counties are looking for ways to be able to continue to provide services to residents, other communities, or in the counties. There are a few options that they can turn to provide funding for social services within their counties, but one option that towns and counties have to help in providing funding for services for senior citizens is the establishment of a senior citizen service district. In 1997, the legislature passed legislation which authorized the establishment of senior citizen service districts by the vote of the residents of the and approval of the residents of the proposed district. Presently, there are three senior citizen service districts in Wyoming, one in Platte County and two in Bighorn County. It has been used widely in the state for several, or it has not been used widely in the state for several reasons. Under the present statute, once the district has been approved and established, it must go back before the voters every 2 years for a reauthorization. The cost of the campaign to reauthorize the district falls upon the entities who are receiving funds from the district board. The entire board of directors is reelected every 2 years, and the present statute does not provide a good definition as to what entities are eligible to receive funds. Mr. Chairman, passing Senate File 88 will make the establishment of the Senior Citizen Service District more palatable for those entities who are working to establish a district. It will lengthen the time for reauthorization from 2 years to 4 years, thus reducing the cost for reauthorization. The board would be elected to serve 4 year staggered terms instead of the whole board running every 2 years. And so there would not be a lot potential loss of institutional knowledge, and the passage of the bill will better define what entities are eligible to receive funds generated by the mill levy that would be assessed by the board of directors of the district. Mr. Chairman, I'll quickly walk the body through the bill. First change is found in Wyoming Statute 18-15-105, subsection D, formation of district mill levy. Starting on page 1, line 15, and page 2, lines 1 through 11, this statute is amended to increase the period of reauthorization from 2 years to 4. The next change is in 18-15-105, subsection B, page 2, lines 17 through line 20, staggers the terms of the board of directors and establishes their terms to 4 years. A small change to the application for election for senior citizen district trustees is found in 18-15-106, subsection A, and it is found on page 3, lines 17 and 18, stating that the candidate for the office would be elected for a term of 2 years or 4 years, or 4 years for initial terms and thereafter for a 4-year term. The next change is found in Wyoming Statute 18-15-111, fund disposition of revenue contract requirements, page 4, lines 4 through line 14, subsection B. And this change defines what entities would be eligible to receive funds from the district. The change deletes the language on line 7, which reads, may provide directly, or, and adds the word shall on line 7 and adds new language starting on line 10 through line 14, so that subsection B reads, the district shall contract for provision of senior citizen programs. Contracts for the provision of senior citizen programs shall be with entities meeting the definition of eligible senior center under Wyoming Statute 19-2-1201, subsection A, paragraph Romanet 3. And that's the definition that we use with the Wyoming Senior Services Board. And then, or other nonprofit entities which provide solely senior citizen programs and shall be for the provision of services within the district. And the contract shall. Another change is in paragraph Romanet 1, and it deletes the language on page 4, lines 16 and 17. If an organization or agency, so that paragraph 1 would now read, require the provider to be incorporated under the laws of the state as a nonprofit corporation prior to the receipt of any funds. And then on page 4, line 20 through line 24, and page 5, line 1 through line 5, section 2 states, notwithstanding section 1 of this act for senior citizens service districts in existence of this effective date of this act, the proposition for the continued imposition of the mill levy for the district and election of the trustees shall be submitted at the 2012 general election. Board members shall be elected for staggered terms as provided in Wyoming Statute 18-15-105 as amended by this act. Mr. Chairman, that's a quick overview of the proposed change to the Senior Citizen Service District statute, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Further discussion? Question? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I was a no vote in committee. And, Mr. Chairman, the reason I was a no vote in committee was primarily I think it's going to work exactly the way the sponsor says it will. It will encourage the formation of these districts. And reading the bill, it looks to me like they're essentially designed so a senior center can get a mill levy to support itself. And it's a matter of tax policy, Mr. Chairman. What we're doing is we encourage shifts from general governmental responsibility to special districts is we're shifting our tax burden onto the property tax. Now, I suppose if you've got a convenient oil field that's right handy, or a convenient mine of some kind, you can say, fine, that's a good way to go. But in general, I think the property tax is one of the least fair ones, Mr. Chairman, that we have, because it is so difficult to determine the value of property. I think nothing special that we've done. I think it's a problem that's inherent in that form of taxation. And I think we need to think pretty hard about the way we're encouraging shift to property tax-supported entities. This one is better than most because there will be an occasional vote of the people on it. But that was the nature of my concern. Wasn't any lack of support, Mr. Chairman, for the senior centers, but I really wonder whether this is the best approach to go about dealing with them.
Further discussion? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senate File 88 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
That Senate File has failed.
Division.
Division being called for. All those in favor, please stand up. Those opposed? You see them all?
15.
That Senate file has failed. Committee of the Whole, pursuant to Rule 11-SR 11-5, a roll call vote will be called. Will the clerk please, Chief Clerk, please call the roll?
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
No.
Amrick? Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
No.
Martin?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Excused.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross? Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Anderson?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 12 ayes, 17 noes, 1 excused.
Senate File 88 has failed. Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 49. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 49, sponsored by Senator Emmerich, Term for Youth Board of Agriculture Members, an act relating to the term of Youth Board of Agriculture Members. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebau, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks. Senator Geis, Chairman.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rises and reports, I move Senate File 49 and ask you to vote aye. I'll yield the floor to Senator Emmerich to explain the bill.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As present, there are 13 members of the Board of Agriculture, four of which are youth members that are selected from the four quadrants of the state. They are from 18 to 30 years of age, and all members of the Board of Agriculture are appointed for 6 years. It is appearing that the youth members, due to changing careers, marriage, movement, et cetera, are not as consistent in maintaining their time on the board and meeting the obligations of the of the commitment. So it's been suggested that the youth members with new ones that are being appointed at the time of after the enactment, possibly, of this bill, they should be only appointed for 4 years. We feel that the commitment to the Board of Agriculture, as well as the commitment that these individuals feel toward their homes and their families, will be more evenly ironed out. I urge your vote.
Further discussion? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senate File 49 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 49 is passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 65. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 65, sponsored by Senator Anderson, Applied Agricultural Research Funding Program, and Act relating to the Department of Agriculture. It was referred to Committee No. 5, Agriculture, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks. Senator Geis, Chairman.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move that Senate File 65 do pass, and there's a standing committee amendment. Would you read that in?
Reading clerk, please read it.
Senate File 65, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 16.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 65 and yield the floor to Mr. President.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is not a long bill, and I think I gave a pretty good introduction, so I just said no.
Mr. President, just 1 second. We left out the committee report from the Appropriations Committee when we read this Senate file in. So would the reading clerk please read that?
Turn myself on. It was re-referred to Committee No. 2, Appropriations. That reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas Peterson. No, Senator Von Flatter and Senator Nicholas Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. President? Mr. President, that's correct. I just wanted to be sure that it was read in because it went to that committee.
Still there and intact. I won't take any more time. I think you've got the concept of what we're trying to do. The appropriation is one time. It would be applied to $100,000 the first year of the biennium, $100,000 the second year biennium. It would not go into the standard budget. It would not go on beyond. This is, in fact, a bit of a trial balloon. At the end of 2 years of the biennium, we'd sit down and see what the applications were, what the products of the research were. And I would simply say this has already generated considerable interest, and the Department of Ag and the gentleman helped me with a large producing advocacy group is already getting interest in how people can enroll in this and participate. With that, I would ask call for the question in regard to the Standing Committee Amendment.
Question being called for. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 65 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Mr. President.
Back on the bill, I would answer any questions that might be opposed in regard to the bill. And
Senator Emery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Considering the small amount of funding that is here and the large amounts of funding that universities can take for administration, I think it might be prudent to consider an amendment limiting overhead costs.
Senator, Mr. President?
Mr. Chairman, I would simply say in regard to the co-sponsor's suggestion or request, that's something that I would certainly consider, given his background and knowledge, to be a friendly amendment, and we'll be looking forward to that on second reading. So, and
Senator Rossis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Mr. President, I was just curious if this is supposed to be only research in Wyoming taking place. You've got the University of Wyoming written here, but within other appropriate educational institution to conduct research, et cetera, I don't see where it would be explicitly a Wyoming institution, and that could be ambiguous if that's not what's intended. I'd also just second the idea by my good friend here from Laramie County that we might need to do some limitations on the overhead so that $200,000 is stretched further.
Mr. President?
I think the intention here is to work with those Wyoming institutions and I think at the bottom of page 2, lines 21 to 23, said, consider the educational institution which will conduct the research, and of course this is the Board of Department of Ag, will conduct the research giving preference to educational institutions located within the state. And then if you look at the amendment, and I'll openly admit that we kind of went pretty rapidly over the amendment. The amendment, line 1, says, delete resource and add insert research, and then goes on through talking about after institution or other qualified entity. So that broadens that concept of what the entity might be within the state, and then that's a broader concept. But what I would say to the senator from Laramie County, in this rulemaking process, this would probably be more clearly spelled out. And my concept is somewhat broader than just a Wyoming institution in the event somebody lived on a border community and wanted to bring in another institution. That would be determined by the recommendation of the Director of Department of Ag with their approval.
Ready for the question? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senate File 65 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 65 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is Senate File 89. Will the reading clerk please read in the Senate file?
Senate File 89, sponsored by Senator Hines. Pioneer Hunting Licenses, an act relating to game and fish. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Dockstader, Driscoll, and Escobel. Senator Burns, Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Report, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 89, Pioneer Hunting Licenses. There is a standing committee amendment, and I ask that it be read in now.
Please read it in.
Senate File 89, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 7.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that I would move the Standing Committee Amendment, and for further explanation of both the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment, I ask that you call on the Chairman of the Revenue Committee.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 89 was brought to me and asked about the situation with Pioneer Hunting License. Right now, to get a Pioneer Hunting License, you had to be born before 1930. And so that group of people are, this year there will be 82. And the question is, will we want to continue offering a Pioneer Hunting License to our older citizens? And so at first I just changed the date. From 1930, I moved it up 10 years. And then I worked with the Game and Fish Department, and to make things work smoother with our Heritage License and the Pioneer License, we came up with this amendment. And discussing the amendment, what we done, we deleted the year 1940 and inserted that a person would need to be at least 75 years of age prior to issuance of the license. And that would take care of ever needing to address that again in the future, that as a person got 75 years old, also on page 2, line 2, it changed the time you had to be in Wyoming from 40 to 50 years. And so then if any time in the future that someone is 75 and have lived in Wyoming for 50 continuous years, they would be eligible for a Pioneer license. The second part of the amendment, then on page 2 after line 3, deals with the Heritage license, which currently says that you have to be born after 1930 and lived here for 50 years. Well, we just eliminated the date 1930, that if you lived here for 50 years, then you would qualify for the Heritage license. Within this amendment, currently you may or may not know that these exemptions we give, the general fund makes up the loss to the Game and Fish Commission. Currently, we've moved it to 1940. They estimated that would cost $54,000 a year. But the way we done that, their estimation, it will only cost us $1,600 per year. So basically, I think it's a good deal for the hunters that are senior citizens, and also it helps out a little bit with the Game and Fish. I'll try to answer any questions you have on the amendment, and if you have no amendment questions, I'll call for the question on the amendment.
Senator Escobel.
Chairman, I think I and some other ones might have a conflict on this.
Conflict so noted. Ready for the question on the amendment? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, in the amendment, I noticed that one of these licenses, it's age 75, and one is age 70, and I'm a little confused as to the differences to how all this works. I will confess I'm not an expert in this area.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, currently we're changing from 40 to 50 years age. Currently, you have to be born before 1930 for the Pioneer license, and we're making that just that you have to be 75. Currently, to get a Heritage license, and the difference between the two, if you get a Pioneer license, I think it's $2. You pay for a fee that you can hunt deer, get a deer license or an antelope or wild turkey. And if you go to the heritage license, which you have to be 70, but then the Game and Fish Commission sets the fees, and it cannot be more than 65% or less than 60% of the resident's fee. So there's two different price range. As you get older, you get a bargain.
Question on the Standing Committee Amendment. All in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 89, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Back on the bill.
And Mr. Chairman, that is virtually the bill, the amendment. I'll call for the question if there's no further questions.
Question being called for. All those in favor of Senate File 89, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 89 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 82. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 82, sponsored by Senator Burns, ATM Fees, an act relating to banks and banking. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Case, Emmerich, Hines, and Perkins. Senator Hines, Chairman.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does it so with a due pass recommendations on Senate File 82. There is no committee amendments, and I'll yield to the sponsor, Senator Burns.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, last year this body voted on to remove the caps on ATM fees from statute, and the vote on that coming out of this body was 28-2. What we didn't realize, and it's my fault, was rather than just removing the caps, what it did was it put it in under rules and regulations of the banking commissioner, which is exactly where we wanted to get it out of, because about half the ATMs in the state are not owned by banks. We put the banking commissioner in an untenable position because the controller of the currency determined that the National Bank Act preempted state caps on national banks. So any national bank doesn't have a cap under federal regulation already. So, Mr. Chairman, what this bill does is actually removes the fee from the jurisdiction of the banking commissioner altogether and removes the caps from ATMs. Currently, Wyoming is the only state in the nation that has caps on ATM fees. And I just want to remind the body that given a lot of the remote locations in the state of Wyoming, the cost to the owners of the ATMs is more than $2 just to do the transaction.
Discussion? Ready for the question? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senate File 82, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 82 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is Senate File 48. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Kurt, you were an aye last year.
Senate File 48, sponsored by Senator Johnson, Professional Engineer Surveys Practice Act, an act relating to surveyors and engineers. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivisions, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, and Martin. Absent, Senator Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. It's my pleasure to introduce an old friend back again for another procedure, I guess, and Mr. Chairman, I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 48, Professional Engineers and Surveyors Practice Act. And finally, after looking at this old friend for so long, Mr. Chairman, we've got a pretty good handle on it. And it was kind of driven home to me when a former member of this legislative body who was pushing a previous version of this a bill a couple years ago, came back and was mad at me the other night and said that we had turned it into a gummer. And so, Mr. Chairman, with that, I think that probably we finally got the fences out of this thing, and it actually is needed to move ahead and bring us into this modern age. And with that, I would like to yield my time to the sponsor who's been stalwart in bringing this forward, and this year he's going to get her done, Senator Johnson.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The good chairman of corporations said that this is an old friend. Last year it was Senate File 113. It passed the Senate. And on its way down to the House, legislative staff took a look at it. They found a couple of questions, and I asked them if they saw those couple of questions, could they guarantee it was a good bill? And they said, not really. So I asked them, I had the House kill it so that staff could go over the take the summer, go over it and really fine-tune it and make sure that there was no problems, and I would come it back. Last year it was Senate File 113. You all passed it. What staff did over the summer was they took out repetitive and unnecessary language. They cleaned up the definition of the practice of professional engineering. They really clarified it. They also cleaned up the definition of land surveyor and clarified it. They organized and clarified all sections on licensing requirements and intern certificates. They got rid of the ambiguities by working with the engineering board itself, and then they went all the way back to the beginning and codified it, so it's what you see right here. There are no fences in it. It replaces a current law that's been in effect since 1987, and you know what the world was like in 1987. A lot has changed, and there's a lot of differences. For instance, in here, right now the state says what size the maps have to be. We take that out of this bill because with computers and printers, the maps can be any size they want at all. If they want to have standard maps, let's do it by rule and regulation. So, Mr. Chairman, I can go into the bill. I've got 2 pages of explanation here, but if I hear somebody calling the question, I'll shut up.
question being called. All those in favor of... Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, but I think there could be some fences in this bill, and I want to make sure that there isn't before we go on.
Proceed.
I want to know that if I or one of my family members can go out to a well that I'm going to drill, punch a Garmin, get the longitude and latitude, call it into the state engineer without violating this act. I think I violate this act, and today I can do that because I did it just a month ago. You know? And so I want to know whether I'm violating this act if I do that. Or do I have to pay $2,500 to an engineer to go out there and punch his Garmin and send it into the state engineer? Because I read it the way I read it, that I'm practicing as a professional engineer. If I make geometric measurements and gather information related pertaining to the physical or legal features of the earth, improvements on the earth, and the space above, on, or below the earth, on page 5, lines 1 through 4. And I see no exemptions in this. So I think there's a fence. Now, show me where I'm wrong, because I hope I'm wrong. But I still want to be able, and I think my constituents out there in my county want to be able to go out there and take the thing that they take out of their backpack when they're hunting, punch it, and send it in.
Senator Johnson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think I can give a generic answer to that, and I'm hoping that the senior senator from Natrona County is over there working to back me up on it. But pretty well anything you do on your own property, that if it wasn't your own property, somebody who was licensed would have to do it, plumbing, electrical, whatever, you can do on your own property, and it's your property. And it's sacred. So I would imagine, without any specifics in here, that would hold true here because, again, it's your own property. and you do as you wish.
Further discussion? Senator Schiffer, as I find you here. Okay. Go ahead, Senator Schiffer.
Thank you. I have a question over on page 29, where we, and it's often standard language, the on line 20, conviction of a felony. And I'm trying to figure out, if we keep putting these all in all of these requirements, pretty quick, the only thing a convicted bank robber can do is rob more banks. And I'm trying to figure out why that has to be in here. You can be an engineer and be a felon. There's all sorts of ways to become a felon, including being a bank robber, but it doesn't mean you can't be a good engineer. And I'm just trying to figure out why that's in there, if there's a good reason for it, because here's a whole form of livelihood that, you know, we try and rehabilitate people, and yet we're saying, here's another, one more job, one more way to earn a living that you're precluded from.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. That reads, conviction of a felony that is related to the ability to practice engineering or land surveying, or that involves dishonesty or evidences lack of good moral character. If the senator from Johnson County wants to bring an amendment in that, on that, they can. But the part of conviction of a felony that is related to the ability to practice engineering or land surveying sounds to me like they caught you doing something crooked, and it was a bad enough crooked that you got convicted of a felony, and it had to do with engineering and or survey.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, when this bill was heard in committee, I was absent because I was doing penance for my sins in front of the Appropriations Committee. And so I wasn't able to review this act in the thoroughness I want to. With regard to Senator Meyer's question, the exemption section I find is 3329604, which is found on page 26 and following. And I don't see that it has an exemption that covers his particular concern. And I would urge the Senate to take a very careful look over the weekend at this particular act to see if there isn't a fence in here of just the nature that was described to us a moment ago, Mr. Chairman, because I don't see the proper exemption for it. And I would caution you that certain of the things you do in your own land, certain of the surveying and engineering, the state engineer does require a licensed surveyor or licensed engineer, probably for good reason. So an exemption crafted in this area needs to be crafted with some skill. But I don't see one that covers the circumstance that was described. And I think maybe the bill needs a little work in this area.
Senator Meyer, and then we'll go to Senator Hicks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and in that section, it expressly prohibits an officer or employee of the United States practicing with the scope of his authority and employment. It says this exemption under this paragraph shall not be applicable when filing water rights or water right petitions with the state of Wyoming as provided in Title 41. Now, the specific thing that I recall in my operation a few years ago, we had the NRCS come out with the Wildlife Trust Fund and Trout Unlimited and a whole bunch of other folks, and they surveyed in a little dam site that we might do someday, and they put it all together, and the NRCS did all of that survey for us. Now, had I had to employ a certified land surveyor just for trying to figure out the option of whether that's something I wanted to do, that could have been $5,000 or $10,000.
You know, so now they're taking the federal people out that have the expertise to do this and say, oh, you're stepping over on our side of the turf and forget about it. You can't do that. So I think this has got some fences, some hurdles, and some roundabouts.
Let me go to Senator Hicks first, and I'll go back to you, Senator Johnson. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, this is an old friend of mine, and I would have to concur with the good senator from over in almost Nebraska. Anyway, here's if we go to this section that requires a certified land surveyor. When you get into building small dams, there's a provision in here. If you have a dam that's over 20 feet, you have to have a legal survey, and it goes through and specifies all the other parameters that have to be in there. We routinely build stock ponds all over the state of Wyoming that are 20 feet. Not to say that's the exact appropriate size for the drainage that you're doing or the hydrology. It's because of the regulatory requirement that says if you go over 20 feet, you're going to have to get a certified land surveyor. And it gets back to the issue of cost. So we're not maximizing the hydrology. We're not maximizing the efficiency of the site. We're minimizing regulatory reform. In other words, if we could have made it 22.5 or 23 feet, we may have been able to store an extra 15 or 20 acre feet of water within the state of Wyoming. The trouble is it's $10,000 to get a survey out in the middle of the Red Desert to be able to do this. So my question is does this section comply with the National Dam Safety Act, the federal regulations governing small dams, or is this more stringent than that? Because if this is more stringent than what the federal regulations are on small dams, then we're really precluding the ability to fully develop Wyoming's water due to a regulatory constraint that becomes these things become cost prohibitive. So, you know, that's a question I'd like to look at, and hopefully the sponsor could have an answer for that.
Okay, Senator Johnson, put your hat on.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope I can remember everything. The exemptions and limitations on page 26, (i), (2i), (3i), (4i), what that says is that the U.S., the state of Wyoming, whatever they want, can have engineering done internally for their agency, for their company, for their business, and they don't have to have an engineer that needs a stamp. I mean, they can have it done by whomever or whatever. However, if they want it filed, the exemption under this paragraph shall not be applicable with the filing water rights or water right petitions with the state of Wyoming as provided in Title 41 of the Wyoming statutes. If they want to send something in, it's got to have a seal from a CE or PE seal on that. But internally, the mine engineers can work out at the mines all they want and make all the plans they want and implement all they want, and it doesn't mean anything. If they want to do something with filing water rights, they have to do this. So it's a loosening. It's telling them that they don't have to have a PE on staff to do their engineering work if they don't want one. We were told there are companies that have an office full of people that can do that. Then they have one professional engineer who will check over the plans, stamp it, sign it, and send it in. So this is actually freeing them up. This is taking fencing away. As to the second question, where in this statute are you talking about? Could you give me a citation?
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, if you go under, it's under Section 3329-801, and if you follow that all the way through and you get to the exemptions, which are on page 36, and then you get to Romanet 2 or Romanet 3, it talks about those constrictions. Those are exempt, but anything bigger than that, you got to get that legal land survey. So if you go to page 36, it kind of outlines my concerns. And I'm just curious, under the federal safety of dams criteria, whether this is more stringent than that.
Senator Johnson, you need a little time here. We may get Senator Burns is up, so we could probably get him to Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, three questions. One is the most general about the need for this. I'm trying to figure out the problem this is trying to solve. Are there rogue surveyors wandering the state, surveying people's property without their permission? Are there engineers who are misrepresenting themselves and their qualifications throughout the state? I'm just wondering what the need is for this. Secondly, I was looking at the powers of this board that is created, and the board actually has the authority to revoke the license of engineers and surveyors throughout the state, which, you know, basically you can take away their means of making a living, and, you know, they can appeal, but it's going to take a while. And yet nobody on the board has to be confirmed by the Senate. They're just appointees, period. And then the last question I have is starts at the bottom of page 12, 3329307, and going on to the top of page 13. And it says, any person reporting information to the board under oath, but then adds, and members, agents, investigators, and employees of the board are immune from personal liability. And I'm just wondering exactly how far that immunity from personal liability extends. Because members, does that include any licensed engineer or surveyor under the board?
Senator Johnson, I hope you had your recorder on there. Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's on. If this is the second time we've done this, maybe interim studies in order, because this sounds like it's pretty heavy-duty stuff and needs to be picked apart in a committee a little stronger.
Senator Johnson, are you thoroughly...
Well, Mr. Chairman, this bill, as you've been told, has been around with us an awfully long time. For many years, it was filled with fences, and for many years, it didn't pass committee because many of us don't like fences. And so we got to this point where we feel that there isn't any fences. Personally, Mr. Chairman, I would love to have this. If you don't want to pass it now, Management Council, give it to corporations and let them do an interim study on it and let it be a committee bill, and I can be done with it.
Senator Case.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I think we just ought to keep it alive one more day because I don't want to see that.
I wonder what the interest was there.
And I think what we really need to do is to draw a chart of what the old law does and what the new law does. And I think you'll really find that the existing law contains many of these same requirements that you're talking about today, Mr. Chairman. And I really do think it'd be wise to keep it one more day. And honestly, if the state engineer and the rest of the board can't satisfy the questions, fair enough. But just because we're hot to trot on a Friday, last day of Committee of the Whole, and, Mr. Chairman, honestly, I don't want this back in corporations. So just one more day.
I don't think you're being more clear than that. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on and for the bill. This has been worked over pretty heavily. I think, whereas there's a number of issues we need to look at more carefully, I think we're getting close to having a product passed. And I think we ought to take it through Committee of the Whole, take it through second reading, and see if we, after a careful look by the members, if we haven't got something that we can pass and be done with it.
Okay. All right. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise report that it do so with the favorable recommendation of Senate File 48, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
Okay, Senate File 48 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 55. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 55, sponsored by Senator Bebout. Purchase of federal lands, an act relating to state trust lands. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks. Senator Geis, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Geis?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move Senate File 55 and with a do pass, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Bebout.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, I realize this is the bill that's preventing you from getting out of here, and it's the last thing that's stopping you, so I'm going to be very brief. The whole guts of the bill, Mr. Chairman, is on page 2, and I'll read it to you. It says, upon request of the board being the SLIB board, and when determined by the board to be consistent with the duties and obligations owed to beneficiaries of state trust lands, sales proceeds, state trust lands only, the state treasurer shall invest funds received from the sale of state trust lands to the federal government by purchasing federal lands and improvements within Wyoming from the federal government. The intent of this, Mr. Chairman, is just if we in fact do sell state lands to the federal government, that we're out there trying to get federal government lands back into the hands of those within our state so we can better manage them. I would ask for your support.
Okay, question being called. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with the favorable recommendation of Senate File 55, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. Senate File 55 has passed the Committee of the Whole.
Mr. Majority Floor.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, I think you're due a round of applause for working this Committee of the Whole. I would have never envisioned that we would have gotten this many bills through. It's a testament not only to the good chairman of the Committee of the Whole, but to all of you. And I appreciate your hard work. Boy, you ran this like a well-oiled rig. With that, Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
Read the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion carried. Reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs to leave as follows. Senate File 2, do pass. Senate File 38, do pass amended. Senate File 59, do pass amended. Senate File 43, do pass amended. Senate File 18, do pass amended. Senate File 107, do pass amended. Senate File 90, do pass amended. Senate File 91, do pass amended. Senate File 94, do pass amended. Senate File 75, do pass amended. Senate File 24, do pass amended. Senate File 26, do pass. Senate File 28, do pass amended. Senate File 36, do pass. Senate File Joint Resolution 2, do pass amended. Senate File 78, do pass amended. Senate File 71, do pass amended. Senate File 66, do pass amended. Senate File 68, do pass. Senate File 79, do pass. Senate File 77, do pass. Senate File 83, do pass. Senate File 81, do pass amended. Senate File 87, do pass amended. Senate File 99, do pass. Senate File 95, do pass. Senate File 88, failed to pass Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. Senate File 49, do pass. Senate File 65, do pass amended. Senate File 89, do pass amended. Senate File 82, do pass. Senate File 48, do pass. Senate File 55, do pass. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
Senator Bebout. Mr. Chairman, do you have a motion for us?
Mr. President, I move adoption of the whole report.
We've all heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. We have that motion carries. The report has been adopted. We have some reports from standing committees, I believe.
February the 24th, 2012, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 27, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Bebout, Cole, Cooper, Jennings, Ruffus, Senator Bebout, Chairman. February the 24th, 2012, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 29, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Bebout, Cole, Cooper, Jennings, and Ruffus, Senator Bebout, Chairman. February the 24th, 2012, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 26, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Bebout, Cole, Cooper, Jennings, and Ruffus, Senator Bebout, Chairman. February the 24th, 2012, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 121, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flader, and Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, House Bills 27 and 26 have appropriations, and I ask that they be re-referred to the Appropriations Committee.
The re-referral request is that House Bills 26, 27,
Mr. President, 26 and 27.
Yes, 26, 27 be re-referred to committee number 2. Is there any objection? Seeing none, it's so ordered. Any other re-referrals at this moment? Well, Senator, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears the desk.
Mr. Chairman, a reminder, members of the Senate, that 5 p.m. today is the deadline to request any amendment to Senate File 1, the budget bill pursuant to Joint Rule 14-1M2. With that, Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday, February 27th.
Thank you. Announcements. We'll go with Senator Scott, I believe.
Mr. President, the Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet at 8 a.m. Monday in the normal committee room. House Bill 9, engrossed, unemployment insurance compliance. House Bill 8, Department of Workforce Services consolidation.
Senator Cole.
Well, Mr. President, your committee number 4, education, is going back to work. And we will meet, not early though, Monday morning at 9 a.m. to consider only one bill, House Bill 72, juvenile detention facility placements over here in S-11 by the smoking line.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, your committee number 1 judiciary will meet on Monday, February the 27th at 8 a.m. in room S-1 to consider the following bills, House Bill 88, DUI penalties, House Bill 55, engrossed, perfection of security interests, titled personal property, House Bill 14, wrongful death representative, House Bill 50, engrossed insurance fraud prevention.
Other announcements? Senator Schiffer, go ahead, please.
Mr. President, your committee number 8, transportation, will meet on Monday, February 27th, up in S-14, upon adjournment, to take up House Bill 4, engrossed, ignition interlock program fees, House Bill 21, exceeding speed limit while passing, and House Bill 22, Gold Star license plates, expanded eligibility.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will be Monday, February 27, 15 minutes after the noon recess in room S-18, to consider House Bill 90, engrossed baseline scientific assessments, and House Bill 66, Industrial Siting, Financial Resources.
Any other announcements? Well, senators, have a restful weekend. You indeed deserve it. And my recent recall, I think this may be a record. I don't know, but it was great, great work. Any further? All right. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate shall stand adjourned until 10 a.m.
Going home?
Monday, February 27th. We are now adjourned.